Chapter 5. Tommy. Omri felt himself grow weak. What an idiot he'd been, not to have realised that the man and not just the medical bag would be changed. Or had he? After all, what did he need more just then than a bandage of the right size for the Indian? Someone of the right size to put it on. And unless he was sadly mistaken, that was just what was waiting inside the magic cupboard. He unlocked the door. Yes, there he was, pink-cheeked, tousle-headed under his army cap, his uniform creased and mud-spattered and blood-stained, looking angry, frightened and bewildered. He rubbed his eyes with his free hand. "Praise be for a bit of daylight, anyway," he said. "What the—" Then he opened his eyes and saw Omri. Omri actually saw him go white, and his knees gave way under him. He uttered a few sounds, half curses and half just noises. He dropped the bag and hid his face for a moment. Omri said hastily, "Please don't be afraid. It's all right. I—" Then he had an absolute inspiration. "I'm a dream you're having. I won't hurt you. I just want you to do something for me, and then you'll wake up." Slowly, the little man lowered his hands and looked up again. "A dream, is it? Well, I should have guessed. Yes, of course, it would be. The old rotten war's nightmare enough, though, without giants and... He stared round Omri's room. "Still and all, perhaps it's a change for the better. At least it's quiet here.
Can you bring your bag and climb out? I need your help."
The soldier now managed a rather sickly smile and tipped his cap in a sort of salute.
"Right you are. With you in a tick," he said,
and picking up the bag, clambered over the edge of the cupboard. "Stand on my hand," Omri commanded. The soldier didn't hesitate a moment, but swung himself up by hooking his free arm round Omri's little finger.
"Bit of a lark, this," he remarked. "I won't half enjoy telling the fellas about this dream of mine in the trenches tomorrow."
Omri carried him to the spot where Little Bull sat on the carpet, holding his leg, which was still bleeding. The soldier stepped down and stood, knee-deep in carpet pile, staring.
"Well, I'll be jiggered," he breathed. "A blooming redskin. This is a rum dream, and no mistake. And wounded, too. Well, I suppose that's my job, is it? To patch him up?"
"Yes, please," said Omri. Without more ado, the soldier put the bag on the floor and snapped open its all but invisible catches. Omri leant over to see. Now he really did need a magnifying glass, and so badly did he want to see the details of that miniature doctor's bag that he risked sneaking into Gillon's room — Gillon always slept late, and anyway it wasn't 7 o'clock yet — and pinching his from his secret drawer. By the time he got back to his own room, the soldier was kneeling at Little Bull's feet, applying a neat tourniquet to the top of his leg. Omri peered through the magnifying glass into the open bag. It was amazing. Everything was there. Bottles, pill boxes, ointments, some steel instruments, including a tiny hypodermic needle, and as many rolls of bandages as you could want. Omri then ventured to look at the wound. Yes, it was quite deep. The pony must have given him a terrific kick. That reminded him, where was the pony? He looked round in a fright, but he soon saw it trying forlornly to eat the carpet. "Must get it some grass," thought Omri, meanwhile offering it a small piece of stale bread, which it ate gratefully, and then some water in a tin lid. It was odd how the pony was not frightened of him. Perhaps it couldn't see him very well.
"There now, he'll do," said the soldier, getting up.
Omri looked at the Indian's leg through his magnifying glass. The wound was bandaged beautifully. Even Little Bull was examining it with obvious approval.
"Thank you very much," said Omri. "Would you like to wake up now?" "Might as well, I suppose. Not that there's much to look forward to except mud and rats and German shells coming over. Still, got to win the war, haven't we? Can't desert even into a dream. Not for long, that is. Duty calls and all that, eh?"
Omri gently picked him up and put him into the cupboard. "Goodbye," he said. "Perhaps sometime you could dream me again."
"A pleasure," said the soldier cheerfully. "Tommy Atkins at your service, any night except when there's an attack on. None of us gets any sleep to speak of then."
And he gave Omri a smart salute. Regretfully, Omri shut and locked the door. He was tempted to keep the soldier, but it was too complicated just now. Anyway, he could always bring him back to life again if he liked. A moment or two later, he opened the door again to check. There was the orderly, bag in hand, standing just as Omri had last seen him, at the salute. only now he was plastic again. Little Bull was calmly pulling on his blood-stained leggings.
"Good magic," he remarked. "Leg better."
"Little Bull, what will you do all day while I'm at school?"
"You bring bark of tree. Little Bull make longhouse."
"What's that?"
"Iroquois house. Need earth. Stick posts in."
"Earth? Posts?"
"Earth? Posts? Bark. Not forget food, weapons, tools, pots, water, fire."
There were no quarrels at breakfast that morning. Omri gulped down his egg and ran. In the greenhouse he found a seed tray already full of soil, well pressed down. He carried that secretly upstairs and laid it on the floor behind the dressing-up crate, which he was pretty sure his mother wouldn't shift, even if it was her cleaning day. Then he took his penknife and went out again. Fortunately, one of the trees in the garden had the sort of bark which comes off easily, a silvery, flaky kind. He cut off a biggish strip and then another to make sure. How long was a longhouse? He pulled some grass for the pony. He cut a bundle of thin, strong, straight twigs and stripped off their leaves. Then he went back to his room and laid all these offerings beside Little Bull, who was seated cross-legged outside his teepee, arms folded, eyes closed, apparently saying his prayers.
"Omri!" came his mother's call from downstairs. "Time to go!"
Omri took out of his pocket the corner of toast he'd saved from breakfast and cleaned out the last of the corned beef from the tin. There was some corn left as well, though it was getting rather dry by now. He filled up the action man's beaker with water from the bathroom, pouring a little into the pony's drinking lid. The pony was munching the fresh grass with every sign of enjoyment. Omri noticed that its bridle had been replaced with a halter cleverly made of a length of thread.
"Omri! Just coming! The others have gone! Hurry up, you'll be late!"
One last thing. Little Bull couldn't make a longhouse without some sort of tool beside his knife. He'd need an axe. Frantically, Omri rummaged in the biscuit tin. Ah, a knight, wielding a fearsome-looking battle-axe. It wasn't right, but it was better than nothing and would have to do. In a second, the knight was locked in the cupboard.
"Omri! 1 second! What are you doing?"
Crash! The axe was being used on the inside of the cupboard door. Omri wrenched it open, snatching the axe from the startled hands of the knight, who had just time for one horrified look before he was reduced to plastic again by the slamming of the door. Never mind, he had looked most unpleasant, just as knights must have looked when they were murdering the poor Saracens in Palestine. Omri had very little time for knights. The axe was a beauty, though, shining steel, with a sharp edge on both sides of the head and a long, heavy steel handle. Omri laid it at Little Bull's side.
"Little Bull!"
But he was still in a trance, communicating with his ancestors, Omri supposed. Well, he would find everything when he came to. There was quite a trail of spilt earth leading behind the crate. Omri flashed down the stairs, grabbed his anorak and his lunch money, and was gone.